This is Audible.
Welcome to the Audio Renaissance unabridged presentation of Visions of Sugar Plums, written by Janet Ivanovich and read by Lorelei King. Chapter 1. My name is Stephanie Plum, and I've got a strange man in my kitchen. He appeared out of nowhere. One minute I was sipping coffee, mentally planning out my day, and then the next minute, poof, there he was. He was over 6 feet, with wavy blonde hair pulled into a ponytail, deep-set brown eyes, and an athlete's body. He looked to be late 20s, maybe 30. He was dressed in jeans, boots, a grungy white thermal shirt hanging loose over the jeans, and a beat-up black leather jacket hanging on broad shoulders. He was sporting 2 days of beard growth, and he didn't look happy.
"Well, isn't this perfect?" he said, clearly disgusted, hands on hips, taking me in.
My heart was tap-dancing in my chest. I was at a total loss. I didn't know what to think or what to say. I didn't know who he was or how he got into my kitchen. He was frightening, but even more than that, he had me flustered. It was like going to a birthday party and arriving a day early. It was like, what the heck's going on? "How?" I asked. "What?"
"Hey, don't ask me, lady," he said. "I'm as surprised as you are."
"How'd you get into my apartment?"
"Sweet cakes, you wouldn't believe me if I told you."
He moved to the refrigerator, opened the door, and helped himself to a beer. He cracked the beer open, took a long pull, and wiped his mouth with the back of his hand.
"You know how people get beamed down on Star Trek? It's sort of like that."
"Okay. So I've got a big slob of a guy drinking beer in my kitchen, and I think he might be crazy. The only other possibility I can come up with is that I'm hallucinating, and he isn't real. I smoked some pot in college, but that was about it. Don't think I'd get a flashback from Wacky Tobacky. There were mushrooms on the pizza last night. Could that be it? Fortunately, I work in bail bond enforcement, and I'm sort of used to scary guys showing up in closets and under beds. I inched my way across the kitchen, stuck my hand into my brown bear cookie jar, and pulled out my .38 five-shot Smith & Wesson.
"Cripes," he said. "What are you going to do, shoot me? Like that would change anything."
He looked more closely at the gun and shook his head in another wave of disgust.
"Honey, there aren't any bullets in that gun."
"There might be one," I said. "I might have one chambered."
"Yeah, right."
He finished the beer and sauntered out of the kitchen into the living room. He looked around and moved to the bedroom.
"Hey," I yelled, "where do you think you're going?"
He didn't stop.
"That's it," I told him. "I'm calling the police."
"Give me a break," he said. "I'm having a really shitty day."
He kicked his boots off and flopped onto my bed, scoping out the room from his prone position.
"Where's the television?"
"In the living room."
"Oh, man, you don't even have a television in your bedroom? How crapola is this?"
I cautiously moved closer to the bed, and I reached out and touched him.
"Yeah, I'm real," he said, "sort of. And all my equipment works."
He smiled for the first time. It was a knock-your-socks-off smile. Dazzling white teeth and good-humored eyes that crinkled at the corners.
"In case you're interested."
The smile was good. The news was bad. I didn't know what "sort of real" meant, and I wasn't sure I liked the idea that his equipment worked. All in all, it didn't do a lot to help my heart rate. Truth is, I'm pretty much a chicken shit bounty hunter. Still, while I'm not the world's bravest person,
I can bluff with the best of them. So I did an eye roll.
Get a grip. You'll come around, he said. They always do.
They?
Women. Women love me, he said.
A good thing I didn't have a bullet chambered as threatened, because I'd definitely shoot this guy. Do you have a name?
Diesel.
Is that your first name or your last name?
That's my whole name. Who are you?
Stephanie Plum.
You live here alone?
No.
That's a big fib, he said. You have living alone written all over you.
I narrowed my eyes. Excuse me?
You're not exactly a sex goddess, he said. Hair from hell, baggy sweatpants, no makeup, lousy personality. Not that there isn't some potential. You have an okay shape. What are you, 34B? And you've got a good mouth. Nice pouty lips.
He threw me another smile.
A guy could get ideas looking at those lips.
Great. The nutcase who somehow got into my apartment was getting ideas about my lips. Thoughts of serial rapists and sex killings went racing through my mind. My mother's warnings echoed in my ears. Watch out for strangers. Keep your door locked. Yes, but it's not my fault, I reasoned. My door was locked. What's with that? I took his boots, carried them to the front door, and threw them into the hall. Your boots are in the hall, I yelled. If you don't come get them, I'm pitching them down the trash chute. My neighbor, Mr. Waleski, stepped out of the elevator. He was holding a small white bakery bag in his hand.
Look at this, he said. I'm starting the day with a donut. That's what Christmas does to me. It makes me crazy, and then I need a donut. 4 days to Christmas, and the stores are picked clean, he said. And they all say everything's on sale, but I know they jack up the prices. They always gotta gouge you at Christmas. There should be a law. Somebody should look into it.
Mr. Waleski unlocked his door, lurched inside, and slammed the door after himself. The door lock clicked into place, and I heard Mr. Waleski's television go on. Diesel elbowed me aside, went into the hall, and retrieved his boots.
You know, you have a real attitude problem, he said.
Attitude this, I told him, closing my door, locking him out of the apartment. The bolt shot back, the lock tumbled, and Diesel opened the door, walked to the couch, and sat down to put his boots on. Hard to pick an emotion here. Confused and astounded would be high on the list. Scared bonkers wasn't far behind.
How'd you do that?
I said, squeaky-voiced and breathless.
How'd you unlock my door?
I don't know. It's just one of those things we can do.
Goosebumps prickled on my forearms.
Now I'm really creeped out.
Relax. I'm not gonna hurt you. Hell, I'm supposed to make your life better.
He gave a snort and another bark of laughter at that.
Yeah, right, he said.
Deep breath, Stephanie. Not a terrific time to hyperventilate. If I passed out from lack of oxygen, God knows what would happen. Suppose he was from outer space, and he conducted an anal probe while I was unconscious. A shiver ripped through me. Yuck.
What are we looking at here? I asked him. Ghost? Vampire? Space alien?
He slouched back into the couch and zapped the television on.
You're in the ballpark.
I was at a loss. How do you get rid of someone who can unlock locks? You can't even have him arrested by the police. And even if I decided to call the police, what would I say? I have a sort of real guy in my apartment.
Suppose I cuffed you and chained you to something. What then?
He was channel surfing, concentrating on the television.
I could get loose.
Suppose I shot you.
I'd be pissed off, and it's not smart to piss me off.
But could I kill you? Could I hurt you?
What is this, 20 questions? I'm looking for a game here. What time is it anyway, and where am I?
You're in Trenton, New Jersey. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, and you didn't answer my question. He flipped the television off.
Crud. Trenton. I should have guessed. 8 in the morning, I have a whole day to look forward to. Wonderful. And the answer to your question is a qualified no. It wouldn't be easy to kill me, but I suppose if you put your mind to it, you could come up with something.
I went to the kitchen and phoned my next-door neighbor, Mrs. Carwatt. I was wondering if you could come over for just a second, I said. There's something I'd like to show you. A moment later, I ushered Mrs. Carwatt into my living room. What do you see? I asked her. Is there anyone sitting on my couch?
There's a man on your couch, Mrs. Carwatt said. He's big and he has a blonde ponytail. Is that the right answer?
Just checking, I said to Mrs. Carwatt. Thanks. Mrs. Carwatt left, but Diesel remained. She could see you, I said to him.
Well, duh.
He'd been in my apartment for almost a half hour now, and he hadn't done a full head rotation or tried to wrestle me down to the ground. That was a good sign, right? My mother's voice returned.
It means nothing. Don't let your guard down. He could be a maniac.
Problem was, the maniac thoughts were banging up against a gut feeling that he was an okay guy. Pushy and arrogant and generally obnoxious, but not criminally insane. Of course, it's possible my instincts were swayed by the fact that he was incredibly sexy looking, and he smelled wonderful. What are you doing here? I asked him, curiosity beginning to override panic. He stood and stretched and scratched his stomach.
How about if I'm the friggin' spirit of Christmas?
My mouth dropped open. The friggin' spirit of Christmas. I must be dreaming. Probably I dreamed I called Mrs. Carwatt, too. The friggin' spirit of Christmas. That's actually pretty funny. Here's the thing, I said to him. I have enough Christmas spirit. I don't need you.
Not my call, Gracie. Personally, I hate Christmas, and I'd prefer to be sitting under a palm tree right now, but hey, here I am, so let's get on with it.
My name's not Gracie.
Whatever.
He looked around.
Where's your tree? You're supposed to have a stupid Christmas tree.
I haven't had time to buy a tree. There's this guy I'm trying to find, Sandy Claus, wanted for burglary, and now he's failed to appear for his court appearance, so he's in violation of his bond agreement.
Ha! Good one. That's a prize-winning excuse for not having a Christmas tree. Let me see if I've got the details right. You're a bounty hunter?
Yes.
You don't look like a bounty hunter.
What's a bounty hunter supposed to look like?
Dressed in black, six-shooter strapped to your leg, a cheroot clenched between your teeth?
I did another eye roll.
And you're after Santa Claus because he skipped.
Not Santa Claus, I said. Sandy Claus, S-A-N-D-Y-C-L-A-W-S.
Sandy Claus? Cripes, how would you like to have that name? What'd he steal? Kitty litter?
This was coming from a guy named for a train engine. First, I have a legitimate job. I work for Vincent Plum Bail Bonds as a bond enforcement agent. Second, Claus isn't such a weird name. It was probably K-L-A-U-S and got screwed up at Ellis Island. It happened a lot. Third, I don't know why I'm explaining this to you. Probably I had a stroke and fell down and hit my head, and I'm actually in ICU right now, hallucinating all this.
You see, this is typical of the problem. Nobody believes in the mystical anymore. Nobody believes in miracles. As it happens, I'm a little supernatural. Why can't you just accept that and go with it? I bet you don't believe in Santa Claus either. Maybe Sandy Claus didn't have his name changed from Klaus. Maybe he had his name changed from Santa Claus. Maybe the old guy got tired of the toys for kids routine and just wanted to go hide out somewhere.
So, you think it might be Santa Claus living in Trenton under an assumed name? Diesel shrugged.
It's possible. Santa's a pretty shifty guy. He has a dark side, you know.
I didn't know that.
Not many people know that. So if you could catch this Claus guy, you'd get a Christmas tree?
Probably not. I haven't got money for a tree, and I haven't got any ornaments.
Oh, man, I'm stuck with a whiner. No time, no money, no ornaments, yada, yada, yada.
Hey, it's my life, and I don't have to have a Christmas tree if I don't want one. Actually, I really did want a Christmas tree. I wanted a big fat tree with bright colored lights and an angel on top. I wanted a wreath on my front door. I wanted red candlesticks on my dining room table. I wanted my closet filled with beautifully wrapped presents for my family. I wanted Christmas music playing on my stereo. And I wanted a fruitcake in my refrigerator. It was what every red-blooded burger was supposed to have at Christmas, right? I wanted to wake up in the morning and feel happy and filled with good cheer and peace on earth and goodwill toward men. And I wanted to have a partridge in my pear tree. Well, guess what? I didn't have any of those things. No tree, no wreath, no candlesticks, no presents, no freaking fruitcake, and no goddamn partridge. Every year I chased after the perfect Christmas, and every year Christmas barely happened. My Christmases were always a mess of badly wrapped last-minute presents, a chunk of fruitcake sent home in a doggy bag from my parents' house, and for the last couple years I haven't had a tree. I just couldn't seem to get to Christmas.
"What do you mean you don't want a Christmas tree?" Diesel said. "Everyone wants a Christmas tree. If you had a Christmas tree, Santa would bring you stuff, like hair curlers and slut shoes."
A sigh escaped. "I appreciate your insight into Christmas, but you're going to have to leave now. I have things to do. I have to work on the Claus case, and then later I promised my mother I'd be over to bake Christmas cookies."
"Not a good plan. Baking cookies doesn't do a lot for me. I have a better plan. How about we find Claus, and then we shop for a tree? And on the way home from the tree shopping, we can see if the Titans are playing tonight. Maybe we can catch a hockey game."
"How do you know about the Titans?"
"I know everything."
I did yet another eye roll and brushed past him. I was doing so many eye rolls, they were giving me a headache.
"Okay. So I've been to Trenton before," he said. "You've got to stop doing those eye rolls. You're going to shake something loose in there."
I'd planned to take a shower, but there was no way I was getting into the shower with a strange man sitting in my living room. "I'm changing my clothes, and then I'm going to work. You aren't going to pop into my bedroom, are you?"
"Do you want me to?"
"No."
"Your loss."
He returned to the couch and television.
"Let me know if you change your mind."
An hour later, we were in my Honda CRV, me and Supernatural Man. I hadn't invited him to ride along with me. He'd simply unlocked the door and gotten into the car.
"Admit it. You're getting to like me, right?" he asked.
"Wrong. I don't like you. But for some unfathomable reason, I'm not totally freaked out."
"It's because I'm charming."
"You are not charming. You're a jerk." He flashed another one of the killer smiles at me.
"Yeah, but I'm a charming jerk."
I was driving, and Diesel was riding shotgun, flipping through my folder on Claus.
"So what do we do here? Go to his house and drag him out?"
"He's living with his sister, Elaine Gluck. I stopped by their house yesterday, and his sister said he disappeared. I think she knows where he is, so I'm going back today to put some pressure on her."
76 years old, and this guy broke into Kreider's Hardware at 2 in the morning and stole $1,500 worth of power tools and a gallon of Morning Glory yellow paint," Diesel read. "Got caught on a security camera. What an idiot. Everybody knows you gotta wear a ski mask when you pull a job like that. Doesn't he watch television? Doesn't he go to the movies?"
Diesel pulled out a file photo.
"Hold the phone. Is this the guy?"
"Yes." Diesel's face brightened, and the smile returned.
"And you stopped by his house yesterday?"
"Yes."
"Are you any good at what you do? Are you good at tracking down people?"
"No, but I'm lucky."
"Even better," he said.
"You look like you've had a revelation."
"Big time. The pieces are beginning to fit together."
"And?"
"Sorry," he said. "It was one of those personal revelations."
Sandy Claus and his sister, Elaine Gluck, lived in North Trenton, in a neighborhood of small houses, big televisions, and American-made cars. Holiday spirit ran high in Sandy's neighborhood. Porches were trimmed in colored lights. Electric candles glowed in windows. Postage-stamped front yards were crammed with reindeer, Frosties, and Santas. Sandy Claus's house was the best, or the worst, depending on your point of view. The house was blanketed in red, green, yellow, and blue Christmas lights, interspersed with waterfalls of tiny white twinkle lights. A lighted sign on the roof blinked the message, "Peace on Earth." A large plastic Santa and his sleigh were stuffed into the minuscule front yard, and three plastic, 5-foot-tall Dickens-era carolers huddled together on the front porch.
"Now this is spirit," Diesel said. "Nice touch with the blinking lights on the roof."
At the risk of being cynical, probably he stole the lights.
"Not my problem," Diesel said, opening the car door.
"Hold it. Close the door," I said. "You stay here while I talk to Elaine."
"And miss out on all the fun? No way."
He angled out of the CRV, and he stood, hands in pockets, on the sidewalk, waiting for me.
"Okay, fine. Just don't say anything. Just stand behind me and try to look respectable." "You think I don't look respectable?"
"You have gravy stains on your shirt." He looked down at himself.
"This is my favorite shirt. It's real comfy. And they're not gravy stains, they're grease stains. I used to work on my bike in this shirt."
"What kind of bike?"
"Customized Harley. I had a big old cruiser with python pipes."
He smiled, remembering.
"It was sweet."
"What happened to it?"
"Crashed it."
"Is that how you got the way you are now? Dead or something?"
"No. The only thing that died was the bike."
It was mid-morning, and the sun was lost behind cloud cover that was the color and texture of bean curd. I was wearing wool socks, thick-soled cat boots, black jeans, a red plaid flannel shirt over a T-shirt, and a black leather biker jacket. I looked pretty damn tough in a very cool way, and I was freezing my ass off. Diesel was wearing his jacket unzipped and didn't look the least bit cold. I crossed the street and rang the doorbell. Elaine opened the door wide and smiled out at me. She was a couple inches shorter than me and almost as wide as she was tall. She was maybe 70 years old. Her hair was snow-white, cut short and curled. She had apple cheeks and bright blue eyes, and she smelled like gingerbread cookies.
"Hello, dear," she said. "How nice to see you again."
She looked to the side where Diesel was lurking and gasped.
"Oh, my," she said,
red scald rising from her neck to her cheek.
"You startled me. I didn't see you standing there at first."
"I'm with Ms. Plum," Diesel said. "I'm her assistant."
"Goodness."
"Is Sandy at home?" I asked.
"I'm afraid not," she said. "He's very busy at this time of year. Sometimes I don't see him for days on end. He owns a toy store, you know, and toy stores are very busy at Christmas."
I knew the toy store. It was a shabby little store in a strip mall in Hamilton Township. "I stopped by the store yesterday," I said. "It was closed."
"Sandy must have been busy running errands. Sometimes he closes down to run errands."
"Elaine, you use this house as collateral to bond out your brother. If Sandy doesn't appear in court, my employer will seize this house." Elaine continued to smile.
"I'm sure your employer wouldn't do a mean thing like that. Sandy and I just moved here, but already we love this house. We wallpapered the bathroom last week. It looks lovely."
Oh, boy. This was going to be a disaster. If I don't bring Claus in, I don't get paid and I look like a big failure. If I threaten and intimidate Elaine into ratting on her brother, I feel like a jerk. Better to be after a crazed killer who's hated by everyone, including his mother. Of course, Crazed killers tend to shoot at bounty hunters, and getting shot at isn't high on my list of favorite activities.
I smell gingerbread, Diesel said to Elaine. I bet you're baking cookies.
I bake cookies every day, she told him. Yesterday I made sugar cookies with colored sprinkles, and today I'm making gingerbread.
I love gingerbread, Diesel said.
He slid past Elaine and found his way to her kitchen. He selected a cookie from a plate heaped with cookies, took a bite, and smiled.
I bet you add vinegar to your cookie dough.
It's my secret ingredient, Elaine said.
So, where is the old guy? Diesel asked. Where's Sandy?
He's probably at his workshop. He makes a lot of his own toys, you know.
Diesel wandered to the back door and looked out.
And where's the workshop?
There's a small workshop behind the store, and then there's the main workshop. I don't know exactly where the main workshop is. I've never been there. I'm always too busy with the cookies.
Is it in Trenton? Diesel asked.
Elaine looked thoughtful.
Isn't that something? She said. I don't know. Sandy talks about the toys and about the labor problem, but I can't remember him ever talking about the workshop.
Diesel took a cookie for the road, thanked Elaine, and we left.
Want some of my cookie? Diesel asked,
the cookie held between perfect white teeth while he clicked the seatbelt into place. I do not. He had a nice voice, slightly husky and hinting of a smile. His eyes fit the voice. I really hated that I liked the voice and the eyes. My life is already complicated by two men. One is my mentor and tormentor, a Cuban-American bounty hunter businessman named Ranger. He was currently out of town. No one knew where he was or when he'd return. This was normal. The other man in my life is a Trenton cop named Joe Morelli. When I was a kid, Morelli lured me into his father's garage and taught me how to play choo-choo. I was the tunnel and Morelli was the train, if you get the picture. When I was a teen working at Tasty Pastry Bakery, Morelli sweet-talked me onto the floor after hours and performed a more adult version of choo-choo behind the eclair case. We've both grown up some since then. The attraction is still there. It's been enhanced by genuine affection, maybe even love. We haven't totally mastered trust and the ability to commit. I really didn't need a third, potentially non-human, guy in my life.
I bet you're worried about the way those jeans are fitting, right? Diesel asked. Afraid to add cookie calories?
Wrong. My jeans fit just fine. I didn't want a cookie with Diesel spit on it. I mean, what do I know about him? And okay, so my jeans actually were a little tight.
Yeesh.
He bit off the gingerbread man's head.
What's next? Does Claus have kids we can interrogate? I think I'm getting the hang of this.
No kids. I ran a check on him, and he has no relatives in the area. Same with Elaine. She's widowed with no children.
That must be hard on Elaine. A woman gets those urges, you know.
I narrowed my eyes. Urges?
Kids. Procreation. Maternal urges.
Who are you?
That's a good question, Diesel said. I'm not sure I fully know the answer to that. Do any of us truly know who we are?
Great. Now he's a philosopher.
Don't you have maternal urges? He asked. Don't you hear that biological clock ticking? Tick, 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 he said,
smiling again, having some fun with it. I have a hamster.
Hey, you couldn't ask for more than that. Hamsters are cool. Personally, I think kids are overrated.
I was getting an eye twitch. I put my finger to it to stop the fluttering. I'd rather not get into this right now. Diesel held his hands up.
No problemo. Don't want to make you uncomfortable.
Yeah, right.
Back to the big manhunt. Have you got a plan here?
He asked. I'm going back to the store. I didn't realize there was a workshop attached. 20 minutes later, we stood at the front door to the store, staring at the small handwritten cardboard sign in the window. Closed. Diesel put his hand to the doorknob, and the locks tumbled open.
"Pretty impressive, huh?" he said.
"Pretty illegal." He pushed the door open.
"You're a real spoilsport, you know that?"
We both squinted into the dark. The only windows were the small panes of glass in the door. The shop was about the size of a two-car garage. Diesel closed the door behind us and flipped a light switch. Two overhead fluorescent fixtures buzzed on and threw a dim, flickering light across the interior.
"Boy, this is cheery," Diesel said. "This would make me want to buy toys, right after I poked my eye out and slit my throat."
The walls were lined with shelves, but the shelves were empty, and train sets, board games, dolls, action figures, and stuffed animals were all jumbled together on the floor. "This is strange," I said. "Why are the toys on the floor?" Diesel looked around the room.
"Maybe someone had a temper tantrum."
An ancient cash register sat on a small counter. Diesel punched a key, and the register opened.
$7.50, he said. "Don't think Sandy does much business."
He walked the length of the store and tested the back door. The door was unlocked. He opened the door, and we both peeked into the back room.
"Not much to see here, either," Diesel said.
There were a couple long metal folding tables and several metal folding chairs. Crude wood toys in various stages of completion cluttered the tables. Most were clunky carved animals, and even clunkier carved trains. The train cars were connected by large hooks and eyes. "Look around for something that might have the address of the other workshop," I said. "It might be printed on a shipping label or box, or maybe there's a scrap of paper with a phone number." We worked both rooms, but we didn't find an address or phone number. The only item in the trash was a crumpled bakery bag from Baldano's. Sandy Claus had a sweet tooth. The store didn't have a phone. None had been listed on the bond agreement, and we didn't see any on site. The bond agreement also didn't list a cell phone. That didn't guarantee that one didn't exist. We left the store, locking the front door behind us. We stood beside my CRV in the parking lot and looked back. "Do you notice anything odd about this store?" I asked Diesel.
"No name," Diesel said. "There's just a door with a small cutout of a wooden soldier on it."
"What kind of a toy store doesn't have a name?"
"If you look closely, you can see where the sign was torn off," Diesel said. "It used to hang above the door."
"Probably this is a front for a numbers operation." Diesel shook his head.
"It would have phones. It would probably have a computer. There'd be ashtrays and cigarette butts."
I raised my eyebrows at him.
"I watch television," he said.
"Okay, whatever." "I'm going to my parents now," I told him. "Maybe you want me to drop you someplace. Shopping center? Pool hall? Loony bin?"
"Boy, that really hurts. You don't want me to meet your parents."
"It's not like we're going steady."
"My assignment is to bring you some Christmas cheer, and I take my job very seriously."
I gave him disgusted. "You do not take your job seriously. You told me you don't even like Christmas."
"I was caught by surprise. It's not usually my gig, but I'm starting to get into it. Can't you tell? Don't I look more cheery?"
"I'm not going to get rid of you, am I?" He rocked back on his heels, hands in jacket pockets, a large grin firmly in place.
"No."
I blew out a sigh, put the car into gear, and pulled out of the lot. It wasn't a far ride to my parents' house in the Berg. The Berg is short for Chambersburg, a small residential community that sits on the edge of Trenton proper. I was born and raised in the Berg, and I'll be a Berger for life. I've tried moving away, but I can't seem to get far enough. Like most houses in the Berg, my parents' house is a small two-story clapboard built on a small narrow lot. And like many houses in the Berg, the house shares a common wall with an identical house. Mabel Markowitz owns the house which adjoins my parents' house. She lives there alone now that her husband has passed on. She keeps her windows clean. She plays bingo twice a week at the senior center, and she squeezes 13 cents out of every dime. I parked at the curb, and Diesel looked at the two houses. Mrs. Markowitz's house was painted a bilious green. She had a plaster statue of the Virgin Mary in her tiny front yard, and she'd put a pot of plastic red poinsettias next to the Virgin. A lone candle had been placed in her front window. My parents' house was painted yellow and brown, and was decorated with a string of colored lights across the front of the house. A big old plastic Santa, his red suit sun-bleached to pale pink, had been set up in my parents' front yard, in direct competition with Mrs. Markowitz's Virgin. My mother had electric candles in all the windows and a wreath on the front door.
"Holy crap," Diesel said. "This is a car crash."
I had to agree with him. The houses were fascinating in their awfulness. Even worse, they were a comfort. They'd looked exactly like this for as long as I could remember. I couldn't imagine them looking any other way. When I was 14, Mrs. Markowitz's Virgin had gotten beamed with a baseball, and some of her head had chipped away. But that didn't stop the Virgin from blessing the house. She stood stalwart through wind and rain and sleet and storm with a chipped head, just as Santa faded and dented, but returned each year. Grandma Mazur was behind my parents' glass storm door looking out at us. Grandma Mazur lives with my parents now that Grandpa Mazur's eating pork rinds and deep-fried peanut butter sandwiches with Elvis. Grandma Mazur's mostly spindle bone and slack skin. She keeps her gray hair curled tight to her head and carries a 45 long barrel in her purse. The concept of growing old gracefully has never taken hold with Grandma. Grandma opened the door when I approached with Diesel.
"Who's this?" she asked, eyeballing Diesel. "I didn't know you were bringing a new man over. Look at me. I'm not even dressed up. And what about Joseph? What happened to him?" "Who's Joseph?" Diesel wanted to know. "He's her boyfriend," Grandma Mazur said. "Joseph Morelli. He's a Trenton cop. He's supposed to be coming over later for dinner on account of it Sunday."
Diesel grinned down at me.
"You didn't tell me you had a boyfriend."
I introduced Diesel to my mom, Grandma Mazur, and my dad.
"What's with men in ponytails?" my father said. "Girls are supposed to have long hair. Men are supposed to have short hair."
"What about Jesus?" Grandma asked. "He had long hair."
"This guy isn't Jesus," my father said.
He stuck his hand out to Diesel.
"Nice to meet you. What are you, one of them wrestlers or something?"
"No, sir, I'm not a wrestler," Diesel said, smiling. "They're sports entertainers," Grandma said. "Only some of them are real good at wrestling, like Kurt Angle and Lance Storm."
"Lance Storm," my father said. "What kind of a name is that?"
"It's one of those Canadian names," Grandma said. "He's a cutie, too."
Diesel looked at me, and the smile widened.
"I love your family."
Chapter 2. My sister Valerie came in from the kitchen. Valerie is recently divorced and penniless, and has moved herself and her two kids into my old bedroom. Before the divorce and the move back to Jersey, Valerie was living in Southern California, where she had limited success at cloning herself into Meg Ryan. Valerie still got the blonde shag. The resilient perkiness dropped out of her somewhere over Kansas on the flight home.
"Dang,"
Valerie said, taking Diesel in. Grandma agreed.
"He's a pip, isn't he?" she said. "He's a real looker."
Diesel elbowed me in the side.
"You see, they like me."
I dragged Diesel into the living room.
"They think you've got a nice ass. That's different from liking you. Sit in front of the television. Watch cartoons. Try to find a ball game. Don't talk to anybody."
My mother and grandmother and sister were waiting for me in the kitchen.
"Who is he?"
Valerie wanted to know.
"He's gorgeous."
Yeah, and I can tell he's a hottie, Grandma said. He's got that look in his eye, and I bet he's got a good package.
He's nobody, I said, trying to push aside thoughts of Diesel's package. He moved into the building, and he doesn't know anybody, so I've sort of adopted him. He's kind of a charity case. Valerie got serious.
Is he married?
I don't think so, but you don't want him. He's not normal.
He looks normal.
Trust me, he's not your normal guy.
He's gay, right?
Yep, that's it. I think he's gay. Better than telling Valerie that Diesel was a supernatural pain in the behind.
The gorgeous ones are always gay,
Valerie said with a sigh.
It's a rule.
Grandma had a big wad of cookie dough on the table. She rolled it out, and then she gave me a star-shaped cookie cutter.
You do the sugar cookies, Grandma said. I'm going to get Valerie working on the drop cookies.
If I take anything with me when I die, it'll be the way my mother's kitchen smells. Coffee brewing in the morning, red cabbage and pot roast steaming the kitchen windows on a cold day in February, a hot apple pie on the counter in September. Sounds corny when I think about it, but the smells are real and as much a part of me as my thumb and my heart. I swear I first smelled pineapple upside-down cake when I was in the womb. Today the air in my mother's kitchen was heavy with butter cookies baking in the oven. My mom used real butter and real vanilla, and the vanilla scent clung to my skin and hung in my hair. The kitchen was warm and cluttered with women, and I was drunk on butter cookies. It would be a perfect moment, if only there wasn't a space alien sitting in the living room watching television with my dad. I stuck my head out the kitchen door and looked through the dining room to Diesel and my dad in the living room. Diesel was standing in front of the Christmas tree, a scrawny 5-foot-tall spruce set into a rickety stand. 4 days to Christmas, and already the tree was dropping needles. My father had placed a green and silver foil star at the balding top of the tree. The rest of the tree was ringed with colored twinkle lights and decorated with an assortment of ornaments collected over the lifetime of my parents' marriage. The rickety stand was wrapped in white cotton batting that was supposed to resemble snow. A village of aging cardboard houses had been assembled on the cotton batting. Valerie's kids, 9-year-old Angie and 7-year-old Mary Alice, had finished the tree off with gobs of tinsel. Angie is the perfect child and is often mistaken for a very short 40-year-old woman. Mary Alice has had a long-standing identity problem and is usually convinced she's a horse.
Nice tree, Diesel said.
My father concentrated on the television screen. My father knew a loser tree when he saw one, and this was no prize winner. He'd cheaped out as usual, and he'd gotten the tree from Andy at the mobile station. Andy's trees always looked like they were grown next to a nuclear power plant. Mary Alice and Angie had been watching television with my father. Mary Alice tore her attention away from the screen and looked up at Diesel.
Who are you?
She asked.
My name's Diesel, he said. Who are you?
I'm Mary Alice, and I'm a beautiful palomino. And that's my sister Angie. She's just a girl. You aren't a palomino,
Angie said.
Palominos have golden hair, and you have brown hair. I can be a palomino if I want to,
Mary Alice said.
Cannot. Can too. Cannot.
I closed the kitchen door and returned to the cookie cutting. There's a toy store in the Price Cutter Strip Mall in Hamilton Township, I said to my mother and grandmother. Do either of you know anything about it?
I never saw a toy store there, Grandma said. But I was shopping with Tootie Frick last week, and we saw a store with a toy soldier on the door. I tried the door, but it was locked, and there weren't any lights on inside. I asked someone about it, and he said the store was haunted. He said last week there was an electrical storm inside the store, with thunder and everything.
I transferred a raw cookie dough star from the table to the cookie sheet. I don't know about the haunted part, but the place is supposed to be a toy store. The guy who owns it has failed to appear for a court date, and I haven't been able to find him. Supposedly he makes some of his own toys, and he has a workshop somewhere, but I haven't been able to get an address for the workshop. When the bail bonds office opened tomorrow morning, I'd have Connie, the office manager, run a cyber search on Claus. I could also check to see if Claus was on the books for electric and water at a location other than his house and his store.
"You're going to have to pick the pace up here," Grandma said. "We still got to put the frosting on these cookies. And we got the filled cookies to make yet, and the cream cheese snowballs. I can't be doing this all day because I got to go to a viewing tonight. Lenny Yellyneck is laid out. He was a member of the Moose Lodge, and you know what that means."
My mother and I looked at Grandma. We were clueless. "I give up," my mother said. "What does that mean?"
"There's always a crowd when there's a moose laid out. Lots of men. Easy pickings if you're on the market for a stud muffin."
My mother was mixing cookie dough in a big bowl. She looked up, spoon in hand, and a glob of dough slid off the spoon and plopped onto the floor.
"Stud muffin?"
"Of course. I've already got my stud muffin all picked out," Grandma said. "I met him at Harry Farfel's viewing week before last. It was a real romantic meeting. My stud muffin just moved into the area. He was driving around trying to find a business associate, and he got lost. So he went into Steve's funeral parlor to ask for directions, and he bumped right into me. He said he bumped into me on account of he has vision problems, but I knew it was fate. All the little hairs on my arm stood up the second he knocked me down. Can you imagine? And now we're practically going steady. He's a real honey. He's a good kisser, too. Makes my lips tingle."
"You never said anything," my mother said.
"I didn't want to make a fuss, what with Christmas on top of us."
I thought it was sort of cool that Grandma had a stud muffin, but I didn't really want a mental image of Grandma in the good kisser. Last time Grandma brought a man home to dinner, he took his glass eye out at the table and set it alongside his spoon while he ate. I had some success at eliminating senior stud muffin thoughts. I was having less success at eliminating thoughts of Diesel. I was worried he was in the living room deciding who in my family should be beamed up to the mother ship. Or maybe he wasn't an alien. What then? Maybe he was Satan. Except he didn't smell like fire and brimstone. His scent was more yum. Okay, probably he wasn't Satan. I went to the kitchen door and did another lookout. The kids were on the floor, transfixed by the television. My father was in his chair, sleeping. No Diesel.
"Hey!" I shouted to Angie. "Where's Diesel?"
Angie shrugged. Mary Alice looked around at me and also shrugged.
"Dad!"
I shouted.
"Where'd Diesel go?"
My dad opened one eye.
"Out. He said he'd be back by dinner time."
Out? As in out for a walk? Or out as in out of body? I looked up at the ceiling, hoping Diesel wasn't hovering above us like the ghost of Christmas past.
"Did he say where he was going?"
"Nope. Just said he'd be back."
My father's eyes closed. End of conversation. I suddenly had a scary thought. I ran to the front foyer with the spatula still in my hand. I looked out the front door, and my heart momentarily stopped. The CRV was gone. He took my car.
"Damn, damn, damn!"
I went outside to the sidewalk and looked up and down the street.
"Diesel!"
I yelled.
"Diesel!"
No response. Big deal man of mysterious talents can open doors, but can't hear me calling him.
"I just got to thinking about today's paper," Grandma said when I returned to the kitchen. "I was looking at the want ads this morning, thinking I could use a job if the right thing turned up, like being a bar singer. Anyway, I didn't see any ads for bar singers, but there was an ad in there for toy makers. It was worded real cute, too. It said they were looking for elves."
The paper was on the floor beside my father's chair. I found the paper and read through the want ads. Sure enough, there was an ad for toy makers, elves preferred. A phone number was given. Applicants were told to ask for Lester. I dialed the number and got Lester on the second ring.
"Here's the thing, Lester," I said. "I got this phone number out of the paper. Are you really hiring toy makers?"
"Yes, but we're only taking toy makers of the very highest caliber."
"Elves?"
"Everyone knows they're the top of the line, toy makers."
"Are you taking on anyone other than elves?"
"Are you a non-elf looking for a job?"
"I'm looking for a toy maker, Sandy Claus." Click. Disconnect. I redialed, and someone other than Lester answered. I asked for Lester and was told Lester wasn't available. I asked for the job seeker interview location, and this resulted in another disconnect.
"I didn't know we had elves in Trenton," Grandma said. "Isn't that something? Elves, right under our nose."
"I think he was kidding about the elves," I said.
"Too bad," Grandma said. "Elves would be fun."
"You're always working," my mother said to me. "You can't even bake Christmas cookies without making phone calls about criminals. Loretta Krakowski's daughter doesn't do that. Loretta's daughter comes home from the button factory and never thinks about her job. Loretta's daughter handmade all her own Christmas cards."
My mother stopped mixing dough and looked at me, wide-eyed and fear-filled.
"Did you send out your Christmas cards?"
Oh, my God, Christmas cards. I forgot all about Christmas cards.
"Sure," I said. "I sent them out last week."
I hoped God and Santa Claus weren't listening to me fib. My mother blew out a whoosh of air and made the sign of the cross.
"Thank goodness. I was afraid you forgot again."
Mental note, buy some Christmas cards. By 5 o'clock, we were done with the cookies, and my mother had a tray of lasagna in the oven. The cookies were in cookie jars and cookie tins, and some were stacked high on plates for instant eating. I was at the sink washing the last of the baking sheets, and I felt the skin prickle at the back of my neck. I turned and bumped into Diesel.
"You took my car," I said, jumping back. "You just drove off with it. You stole it."
"Chill. I borrowed it. I didn't want to disturb you. You were busy with the cookie making."
"If you had to go somewhere, why didn't you just pop yourself there, like you popped into my apartment?"
"I'm keeping a low profile. I save the popping for special occasions."
"You're not really the spirit of Christmas, are you?"
"I could be if I wanted. I hear the job's up for grabs."
He was wearing the same boots and jeans and jacket, but he'd substituted a brown sweater for the stained thermal.
"Did you go home to change?"
"Home is far away."
He playfully twirled a lock of my hair around his finger.
"You ask a lot of questions."
"Yeah, but I'm not getting any answers."
"There's a chubby little guy in the living room with your dad. Is that your boyfriend?"
"That's Albert Clown. He's Valerie's boyfriend."
I heard the front door open, and seconds later, Morelli sauntered into the kitchen. He looked first to me, and then to Diesel. He extended his hand to Diesel.
"Joe Morelli,"
he said.
"Diesel."
They spent a moment measuring. Diesel was an inch taller and had more bulk. Morelli wasn't someone you'd want to meet in a dark alley. Morelli was all lean, hard muscle and dark, assessing eyes. The moment passed. Morelli smiled at me and dropped a feather-light kiss on the top of my head.
"Diesel is an alien or something," I said to Morelli. "He appeared in my kitchen this morning."
"As long as he didn't spend the night,"
Morelli said. He reached around me to a cookie tin, removed the lid, and selected a cookie. I cut my eyes to Diesel and caught him smiling. Morelli's pager buzzed. He checked the readout and swore to himself. He used the kitchen phone, staring at his shoes while he was talking. Never a good sign. The conversation was short.
"I have to go," Morelli said. "Work."
"Will I see you later?"
Morelli pulled me out to the back stoop and shut the kitchen door behind us.
"Stanley Kamensky was just found stuffed into an industrial waste barrel. It was sitting in the alley behind that new Thai restaurant on Sumner Street. Apparently it had been sitting there for days and was attracting flies, not to mention some local dogs and a pack of crows. He was muscle for Lou Two Toes, so this is going to get ugly. And if that isn't bad enough, there's something screwy going on with the electric grid. There have been power outages in pockets all over Trenton, and they all of a sudden correct themselves. Not a big deal, but it's making a mess out of traffic.
Morelli turned his head to look through the glass pane into the kitchen.
Who's the big guy?
I told you, he popped into my kitchen this morning. I think he's an alien, or maybe he's some kind of a ghost. Morelli felt my forehead.
Are you running a fever? Have you fallen down again?
I'm fine. Pay attention. The guy popped into my kitchen.
Yeah, but everyone pops into your kitchen.
Not like this. He really popped in, like he was beamed down or something.
Okay, Morelli said. I believe you. He's an alien.
Morelli dragged me tight against him, and he kissed me, and he left.
So, Diesel said when I returned to the kitchen, how'd that go?
I don't think he believed me.
No kidding. You go around telling people I'm an alien, and they're eventually going to lock you up in the booby hatch.
And just for the record, I'm not an alien, and I'm not a ghost. Vampire?
A vampire can't enter a home without an invitation.
This is too weird.
It's not that weird, Diesel said. I can do some things most people can't do. Don't make more of it than it is.
I don't know what it is. Diesel's smile returned. At precisely 6 o'clock, we sat down to the table.
Isn't this nice? Grandma said. It feels like a party.
I'm squished, Mary Alice said. Horses don't like when they're squished. There's too many people at this table.
I've got room, Albert Clown said. I can pick my fork up and everything.
My father already had lasagna on his plate. My father always got served first, with the hope that he'd be busy eating and wouldn't jump up and strangle Grandma Mazur.
Where's the gravy? He asked. Where's the extra sauce?
Angie carefully passed the bowl with the extra marinara sauce to Mary Alice. Mary Alice had a hard time getting her hooves around the bowl. The bowl wobbled in midair and then crashed onto the table, setting loose a tidal wave of tomato sauce. Grandma reached across the table to grab the bowl, knocked over a candlestick, and the tablecloth went up in flames. This wasn't the first time this had happened.
Yo! Fire! Clown yelled. Fire! Fire! We're all gonna die!
My father looked up briefly, shook his head like he couldn't believe this was actually his life, and returned to shoveling in his lasagna. My mother made the sign of the cross, and I dumped a pitcher of ice water into the middle of the table, putting an end to the fire. Diesel grinned.
I love this family. I just love this family.
I didn't really think we were going to die, Clown said.
Have another slice of lasagna, my mother said to Valerie. Look at you, you're all skin and bones.
That's because she throws up when she eats, Grandma said.
I have a virus, Valerie said. I get nervous.
Maybe you're pregnant, Grandma said. Maybe you got the morning sickness all day long.
Clown went white and fell off his chair. Crash! Onto the floor. Grandma looked down at him.
They don't make men like they used to.
Valerie clapped her hand to her mouth and ran out of the room, up the stairs to the bathroom.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, my mother said.
Clown opened his eyes.
What happened?
You fainted, Grandma said. You went down like a sack of sand.
Diesel got out of his chair and helped Clown to his feet.
Way to go, stud, Diesel said.
Thank you, Clown said. I'm very virile. It runs in the family.
I'm tired of sitting here, Mary Alice said. I need to gallop.
You will not gallop, my mother yelled at Mary Alice. You're not a horse. You're a little girl, and you'll act like one or you'll go to your room.
We all sat stunned, because my mother never yelled. And even more shocking, my mother, having put her time in with me, the original space cadet, never made an issue of the horse thing. There was a moment of silence, and then Mary Alice started bawling. She had her eyes scrunched tight and her mouth wide open. Her face was red and blotchy, and tears dripped off her cheeks onto her shirt.
"Christ,"
my father said.
"Somebody do something."
"Hey, kid," Diesel said. "What do you want for Christmas this year?"
Mary Alice tried to stop crying, but her breath was coming in gulps and hiccups. She scrubbed tears off her face and wiped her nose with the back of her hand.
"I don't want anything for Christmas. I hate Christmas. Christmas is poopy."
"There must be something you want," Grandma said.
Mary Alice pushed her food around on her plate with her fork.
"There's nothing. And I know there's no Santa Claus, too. He's just a big, fat fake."
No one had an immediate response. She'd caught us by surprise. There was no Santa Claus. How crappy is that? Diesel finally leaned forward on his elbows and looked across the table at Mary Alice.
"This is the way I see it, Mary Alice. I can't say for sure if there's really a Santa Claus, but I think it's fun to pretend. The truth is, we all have a choice to make, and we can believe in whatever we want."
"I think you're poopy, too,"
Mary Alice said to Diesel. Diesel slid his arm across my shoulders and leaned close, his breath warm against my ear.
"You were smart to choose a hamster," he said.
Valerie returned to the dining room in time for dessert.
"It's an allergy," she said. "I think I'm lactose intolerant."
"Boy, that's a shame," Grandma said. "We got pineapple upside-down cake for tonight, and it's got lots of whipped cream on it."
Beads of sweat appeared on Valerie's upper lip and forehead, and Valerie ran back upstairs.
"Funny how these things come on," Grandma said. "She was never lactose intolerant before. She must have caught it in California."
"I'm going to get some cookies from the kitchen," my mother said.
I followed after her and found her belting back a tumbler of Four Roses. She jumped when she saw me.
"You startled me," she said.
"I came to help with the cookies."
"I was just taking a nip."
A shudder raced through my mother.
"It's Christmas, you know."
This was a nip the size of a big gulp. "Probably Valerie isn't pregnant," I said. My mother drained the big gulp, crossed herself, and went back into the dining room with the cookies.
"So," Grandma said to Clown, "do you make Christmas cookies at your house? Is your tree up yet?"
"We don't actually have a tree," Clown said. "We're Jewish."
Everyone stopped eating, even my father.
"You don't look Jewish," Grandma said. "You don't wear one of them beanies."
Clown rolled his eyes up as if looking for his missing beanie, clearly at a loss for words, probably still not getting total oxygen to his brain after fainting.
"How great is this?" Grandma said. "If you marry Valerie, we can celebrate some of those Jewish holidays, and we can get a set of the candlesticks. I always wanted one of those Jewish candlestick things." "Isn't this something?" Grandma said. "Wait until I tell the girls at the beauty parlor that we might get a Jew in our family. Everyone's going to be jealous."
My father was still sitting lost in thought. His daughter might marry a Jewish guy. This wasn't a great thing to happen, in my father's view. Not that he had anything against Jewish guys. It was that chances were slim to non-existent that Clown was Italian. In my father's scheme of things, there were Italians, and then there was the rest of the world.
"You wouldn't be of Italian descent, would you?"
my father asked Clown.